Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Metro Detroit area. I'm your host, Connor Z. As always, with my co-host of the CNV, Vladdy. Vladdy, what's going on, man? Another weekend of good basketball, good vibes. A new sport has started, and it's April in the D.
So I'm doing great. You mentioned the next week in sports. This was a great Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, in my opinion. I know we kind of talked about it last week, where when you don't have those kind of less talented and clearly inferior Cinderella teams the way you have in years past, it is more entertaining watching real teams go at it. So that was great. I got to kick off my golf season on Friday, shot an 88, albeit one of the easiest courses in America. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt, but game felt
No,
good.
nothing with a grain of salt.
Game felt good. I was hitting straight drives, so I know that's always one of the funniest things when I'm playing is there's not a lot of those. It's a lot of ooh, four right, but that was great. Getting ready to go to my trip to Monaco this upcoming weekend, and so I'm doing amazing. Outside of that, how are you? How are things?
I'm good, man. Nothing really to note. I went home. Was with the family for most of the weekend, in the Ville. For those of you that know what it is, so that was nice. Don't usually get to spend that much time with my family anymore, so that was good. Nothing else to note, just chugging along with life as we always do. So let's kind of get into it. The first topic we're going to get into March Madness shortly, quickly, since we have a brand new season upon us in baseball, everyone's favorite. I know I'm not going to bore you with too many details, but I am going to do a brief kind of Tigers preview. They had their first series this past weekend. They're just starting. They're in New York tonight, about to, I almost said tee off, but first pitch of it, about to go off any second now to play another struggling Mets team. So to kind of give a preview of this year's Tigers team, I think it's a team that you should be looking for. So you should just start to be getting excited about this team. They have enough young guys after years and years of just the bottom of the
Ass.
barrel. They finally have some of these young prospects that are going to be on a major league roster. Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson, obviously, both in their first or their second full years together. They're kind of the 1-2 punch as far as young prospects in the lineup. You're also going to see Parko Meadows step into a center field role. Big 6'5 kid, lots of promise, great defender in center field, push Riley Green into the corner outfield spots. And then Cary Carpenter, who played most of last year, has kind of picked off right where he left off in terms of being hot. He's started off amazing in this first series in Chicago this past weekend. And then the rest of the lineup, I mean, they made some additions. Nothing to write home about. Third base is going to be a revolving door. You saw three different guys play third base in the first series. And Andy Ibañez, Gio Urshela, who I think will eventually get the job every day, who they came in and signed late, and Zach McKinstry. Catching duties are going to be Jake Rogers, and I'm blanking on the other kid's name. He seemed pretty solid. He caught the second game against Chicago. And then the other big name as far as prospects is in the infield at second base is Cole Keith is his name. Another one of those prospects that you've kind of been hearing about for years is finally looking like he's going to be an everyday MLB player. Middle of the lineup, batting sixth right now and playing second base. With that said, as kind of all the promise goes, it's still not that good of an MLB roster. There's no superstar on this team. You look for guys like Riley Green and Torkelson, like I mentioned, to step into, more prominent roles as big league players. But that's not a guarantee. They do play in a weak division. It's going to be a bottom 10 offense again, I would assume. And so it's really going to have to be on the pitching, which was great in Chicago. I'm somewhat pessimistic about the starting rotation. It leads off with a Tarik Skubal, who's a stud young guy. Has dealt with some injuries. Looks like he's finally healthy. He's going to be an AL Cy Young front runner, or at least in the conversation. And then you had Kenta Maeda, who we signed, who got rocked, and Jack Flaherty, who looked good, but he also had a bad season last year. And then it's rounded out by Casey Mize, and I'm blanking on the fifth guy, but there is a fifth guy. The strength of this team is going to be the bullpen. I think you saw it in Chicago. They got some good names. Foley, Lang, Shelby Miller, they signed. Chafin, they signed. They've got some guys that can throw. You look for Alex Faedo, another first-round pick numerous years ago now. Got a chance as a starter, didn't work out. Hopefully, they're looking and projecting him to be a good reliever. We'll see how that goes. But overall, this is a team that is probably slightly below average, that may be average just because of how bad the division is this year. You don't really have any teams that'll wow you. Kansas City made some signings. They'll be around 500. Minnesota will be above 500. The White Sox will suck. We obviously saw that this past weekend. And the Guardians are also going to be very, very bad. So that's kind of the AL Central preview. Look for this team to kind of, I'd guess they're in the somewhere in the 75 to 85 win range. That's kind of a big range, I know, but look for them to be in the hunt this year, whether that's, only 80 and 82, and that's only four games out of a division title, which I wouldn't be that surprised in this division. But yeah, so that's the Tigers preview. And oh yeah, Javier Baez is still awful. I don't think many people needed to hear that, though. You just have to turn on Twitter and you can see him swinging at air.
Yeah, for me, go baseball, go Tigers. Maybe I'll get out to a game this year. That's my preview.
Opening day Friday, or home opening day Friday. So let's get into the more important stuff. The March Madness is kind of the main topic. We have our four, our final four. It's sorry, that was an awful belch. You have your kind of, we talked about this before we started recording. For as forgettable as last year's Final Four was, as far as storylines and programs in it, this year is not lacking in any stretch of the imagination. You have just the seventh double-digit seed to make the Final Four in NC State. As an 11 seed, they're your team of dreams. You have the Purdue team on a vengeance tour after losing as a 16 or as to a 16 seed in the first round. And then on the other side, you have the team of the dynasty era, you could call them, haven't lost a game these past 2 years by less than 13 points in the UConn Huskies, who are rolling as ever. And then you have the fun turnaround program that Nate Oates has done, in a team that is widely criticized for their way of play. But he's kind of brought them to basketball relevance after being a top seed last year and now making a Final Four. We can kind of get into that a little more after we go through the games that were this weekend. Let's start on Thursday with the Sweet 16. First game. Do you just want to go game by game since there weren't as
I
many?
was gonna say I think we should. I think there's 12 games to cover between the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. So I think it's and a couple of them aren't overly noteworthy. I think the first game was Clemson, Arizona, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So Arizona started that basketball game with some of the worst performance and effort and just anything that you can think of that I've ever witnessed from a team at any level. You had guys couldn't catch a pass. They looked like Madi Sissoko out there. You had negative spacing. The defense was non-existent. Shot selection was atrocious. Caleb Love taking a one-legged runner from the three-point line where there was still 3 or 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And for Caleb Love specifically, it didn't get any better.
No.
I will kind of tie this all together because obviously the team lost, but if you're the superstar of the team, you're supposed to do something. And he did not do that. He was 0 for 9 from deep. He was, I believe, 4 of 17 or 4 of 18 from the field overall. I mentioned the atrocious shot selection. There was a couple as well that he just took early deep shots on and without actually ever running anything or a set play. It was pathetic. And the whole team was bad. If you're Arizona and you shoot 4 of 26 from deep, probably not going to win a basketball game. The fact that
No.
they were even still in it for like as long as they were, I guess kudos to them there. Maybe that's more of a Clemson thing for not being able to pull away. It was just pathetic. That kind of symbolizes what that Arizona program has been for the last 20 years. just
Yeah.
always messing up. I don't know if you saw the exact statistic where it was their last 7 or 8 trips to the Sweet 16 is Arizona. They've lost all of them to worse seeds than them. And I mean, obviously, you know what happened with Princeton last year. You know some of the letdowns with DeAndre Ayton. This is just a perpetual choke job, kind of. I don't want to call it an organization because we're not talking about professional franchises, but it's a choke job school. They're
Yeah, with
heading.
now multiple coaches too.
Yeah, that's also true. They're heading off to the Big 12. How does that really factor towards anything? I'm not sure, but I guess the one redeeming quality that Arizona can say that they have is like a Purdue or like an Illinois team that we've much maligned over the years for failing. They at least are continuously a high seed and continuously put together good enough regular seasons to be able to call them
Yeah.
choke jobs. And they're not Michigan State floundering in the 7 to 10 seed range every year.
That's
So
true.
I guess if you want to say cool there, but pathetic from Caleb Love and that team.
Yeah. The next one, San Diego State versus UConn. UConn continues to roll. This game was never close. You had the rematch of last year's national championship, and it's just, I'll get into UConn a little later for their game over the weekend, because that was kind of my first time truly watching them, was that Illinois game. But this is, they just can get you in so many different ways. And I didn't know that they had their own Zach Edey in white guy form,
Playing it.
essentially. I know Zach Edey's half white, but yeah, I don't have much to add on this. It was never really close, and I don't think many people thought it was going to be that close. I think it was at a double digit line going into it.
The only thing I had written down in my notes was murder. This was kind of one of those games where I said not much to talk about here.
Yeah, and then before we get into these next two, you're a much later, you didn't work on Friday, and you're also much more of a night owl than I am.
Yes.
But can we not recognize, what are we doing scheduling Thursday night games that don't tip off until 10:30 at night? That's ridiculous. I don't want to hear the West Coast thing anymore.
Oh, I agree with you.
Two-thirds of the population lives on our side of the Mississippi. They don't watch sports in general. It's well noted. It's just, I don't get how you can do that.
No,
It's
I.
just, you're not going to get viewership. You're going to get more people wanting to like sneaking in at work for a 4 o'clock or a 4:30 or a 5:30 game than you are with these 10:30 starts when people got to get up in the morning. And maybe that's old man barking at a tree, but I'll say this. I didn't watch either of these two games because they frankly started too late for me.
No, I actually agree with that. I don't think it is an old man barking tree. I had this conversation with my dad. You're completely correct. The West Coast does not give a rip about sports. We saw it when the LA Rams were in the Super Bowl and the city of LA was not even a top, I think, 15 US market to watch the Super Bowl a few years back. We see it every single day where they're more interested in their Hollywood and their content creation and their kind of
Sway
fake,
House.
their fake lifestyle where it's all material and not actually substantial. But that's not the point of this podcast. For the I completely agree with you. It's outrageous that they tip those games off that late. With that said, let's talk about Illinois and Iowa State. Very interesting first half. Illinois played kind of some lockdown defense, which Iowa State is known for. And Illinois also kind of took care of the ball. Iowa State scores a lot off of turnovers. They were not able to do that. They were not able to force Illinois into many kind of just freebie giveaways. And it allowed Illinois to control most of the first half. I'll kind of go as far as to say if Illinois shot better from the free throw line, they could have put that game to bed in the first half. They were awful. I mean, Michigan State levels of awful in that first half. Then it's funny because Terrence Shannon Jr., we've talked about him, not a guy you want to hang out with or not a guy you want to bring over to the house. But if he's on your team, he's a lot of fun to watch. Guy plays basketball at a very high level. I think that, I mean, his season's over now, but I think he's one of the he or he was one of the premier two-way players in basketball, probably the best in my opinion. Because obviously everyone sees the scoring. It's easy to look at a box score and see 40 points and 50 points and 30 points from him every given day for basically for the last 2 weeks in the postseason play, but on the defensive end as well, he's sensational. Kind of that team I don't want to say rallied off of him, but he led by example. If your best player is in there doing the dirty work and you're not leaving that to the glue guys and the energy guys, that sets a good example. And I think that's why Illinois finally, quote unquote, got over the hump and made their first Sweet 16 and then Elite Eight since 2005. He did get some foul trouble and spend some time on the bench in the second half. That allowed Iowa State to kind of come back into it. But it wasn't enough. And I'm going to be honest, from Iowa State's perspective, I was thoroughly unimpressed with that performance and that team. And I think the reason I even say that is because maybe I put them up on a pedestal seeing a box score of what they did to Houston in the Big 12 tournament. And I never actually knew what this team was about because they looked awful against Illinois.
Yeah.
To the next game, Bama UNC. This was kind of poetic, in my opinion, because everyone sat there saying, "Oh my God, we need RJ Davis versus Caleb Love." And it would have been great. But
And
those two
neither of them.
guys are probably directly responsible for neither of their teams playing in the Elite Eight where they could have played each other. This was just an entertaining track meet. Neither team really ran a slow half-court offense. It was always push, push, push. Jacking up shots with 20 seconds left on the shot clock. It was so much fun to watch. Second half was kind of a game of runs. Bama UNC traded some leads, and it ended up with Alabama on top. I guess a couple of things that I wrote down, and I'm going to try and repicture this as I'm reading what I had notes wise, but down by four with 8 seconds left, UNC took the ball to the basket. And I just don't understand how you think you have enough time to do anything after that. Obviously, yes, the layup when the other team doesn't guard you is a lot more of a high percentage shot than a three-pointer, but you have only cut 2 points off the lead. You then need to foul, and then you need to turn back around and jack up more stuff. So I don't understand what some of that coaching was. I'll talk about RJ Davis the same way I talked about Caleb Love. He also, I think, went 0 for 9 from deep or something similar to it. He was also, I think him and Caleb Love were a combined 20% from the field. Both of those guys basically played their teams out of a chance to be in the Elite Eight. And it's funny, like I said, it's poetic that everyone kind of started that region of the bracket saying we want Alabama or we want UNC and we want Arizona to meet because it is RJ Davis, because it is Caleb Love. And then those two leaders, quote unquote, if you will, kind of drop the ball.
Yeah. Interesting. It's a good point you make that those two were the ones to drop the ball. Caleb, one thing I'll say going back to Caleb Love is like sometimes you watch him and it just looks like out of control. Like the jump shot just kind of seems like rushed sometimes. Like it doesn't look
Oh, yeah.
smooth all the time,
I would go
even when it
beyond.
goes in.
No, and I'll go even beyond out of control. I just think there's no thought process. I feel like control implies that like you're thinking about what you're doing. I think he's just impulsively jacking up shots at times, and that's great because yes, he's supremely talented, but it's not going to work all the time, man. And you got to know when to cut it off.
Yeah. So moving on to Friday, the second day of the Sweet 16, it started with North Carolina, kind of the upset of the day. Maybe not the upset of the day. One of two upsets of the day. They beat Marquette 67-58. I don't know, like Kolick did what he could. It's just like, do you want to start going off on DJ Burns now, or
Oh,
do we
I
wait
was actually
until?
going to do it later because I actually don't think DJ Burns had the greatest game here. I think he spent some time on the bench with foul trouble, but it was more of just an America's team. They got up on Marquette early, and then I talk about UNC and Alabama going cold. Marquette went cold from D.
Yes,
I think they
yes.
shot like 11% from three. They couldn't buy a basket, and they just at the end couldn't. They ran out of time to come back. Again, I mentioned the DJ Burns thing specifically for Duke because I think that was really the game where he shined, whatever the proper past tense is there. I don't have much more there. You mentioned Kolek did what he could, driving to the basket and kicking out when the defense collapsed, but none of the shots go in, none of the shots go in.
Look, probably the least surprising of the wins for North Carolina State for me. I know I feel like I keep just Marquette bashing, but like I just don't like any team with Shaka Smart until he's proven differently is not going to make it out of a Sweet 16. I'm sorry.
I mean,
And I,
I agree with I agree. I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, wasn't that Shaka Smart's first second weekend since the
since the
VCU run?
VCU,
Yeah, because
yes.
I was gonna say, I mean, you mentioned that make it out of the Sweet 16. They haven't made it out of the first weekend since, but yeah, I agree with that. I don't even think it's just bashing, it's calling it how it is. You gotta do what Illinois and Purdue did. Prove somebody wrong. Go out and win a game.
Yeah. And what I think we'll get into the next game, Gonzaga, Purdue 80, Gonzaga 68. I think this was one people had circled as far as the Sweet 16 matchups, two big name programs. Obviously not the same Gonzaga team as maybe they've had in some other years, but they had already played in November. Gonzaga, I think, lost by 10, but it was somewhat competitive. So there was kind of this thing like, could Mark Few figure it out? The answer was no. It kind of spent most of that game. I think of it as, again, going, I'm gonna, this is my example for every time, because Michigan State loves to do this, is they were never really in it. It stayed in that like 6 to 15 range the entire time. And they were never really out of it either, but you know, I never felt like they had a chance to win that game.
Yeah, it's funny because I had actually kind of written this game off. I know you had mentioned this is the one people had circled. I was one of those. I thought Gonzaga, based on the way they attacked Kansas and basically assaulted Kansas, I thought that they could use a similar strategy to kind of harass Braden Smith with the Nembhard. And then as a team, they could just pick apart Zach Edey on the defensive end. And I thought it could lead them to kind of having a good shot to win. And it did not go that way. They could not go at Edey. Braden Smith played pretty well. And the biggest thing was, I mean, we've talked about it. You know what Zach Edey is going to give you. He's 20 and 10, at least, any given night. There's nothing you can do
30 and
about
10 in the
it.
tournament so
Yeah.
far, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. No, but the important part was Purdue's guards. I think I want to say they shot 45% from deep. It was crazy. And like, when you couple what Zach Edey can do with the fact that, oh my God, now I can't collapse on him because if he kicks it out, we're giving up 3 points instead of two. It was just a landslide. I think the Purdue crowd helped out in Detroit. They were
Definitely.
able to travel very well, and I remember, and I'll still kind of maintain this. I said after that game that if Purdue's guards can shoot the way they did, they would have a chance against UConn.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into this after we're done with the games, but I do genuinely think like those two teams both look unstoppable right now in different ways. Purdue, just like Zach Edey, has elevated his game at this point. Like, this is even a different Zach Edey we've seen in
Oh,
these.
yeah.
I don't know if it's that it's not Big Ten teams that see him every year, have seen him, you know, every week, playing twice a year for the last 3 years. He's been a decent player. It's guys that have to, you know, especially if you're the weekend games, you only get a day of prep for him. I guess at this point you should know he's coming, and now you have a week of prep, or at least North Carolina State will. But he's elevated his game to a new level in the
Absolutely.
tournament so far.
I mean, yeah, we'll talk about the second game where he just went nuclear. He has been pretty good. I can't even fault it. As much as we hate watching them, can't fault it.
The next one, Duke beats Houston 54-51 in the other upset of the day. I'll call this one maybe one Duke should think about renouncing. Jamal Sheed goes down. He's
Shed, by the way.
best player on their team, probably going to be an All-American. He's going to be up for, or he was an All-American. They've already given those out. Sorry. Why can't I think of the top player, the Wooden Award? He's going to be a finalist for that. He's a good player. And it just kind of was a brick fest. I kind of had a hard time watching what I did watch of this one just because it was a lot of brick fests. Even guys like McCain for Duke, who was a great shooter, had a rough day shooting. Like, it was not anybody's day shooting. And it was not a really Duke game to win. You don't think of a Duke team winning those types of, you know,
Scrappy.
scrappy, physical, defensive, not a lot of makes going in games. But they did, and that was probably the most surprising win to me of the day, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you're kind of completely correct. The very first thing I had is this is such a tough game to assess because Jamal Shead does go down 6, 7 minutes into the half where Houston was up 16-10, end up losing, I think it was 54-50, if I'm not mistaken. And when Jamal Shedd went down, Houston's entire offense went down. I mean, you talk about kind of the ugliness of the game. I think that's just kind of Houston basketball. They are relentless on defense, and whether Jamal Shedd is there or not, the rest of that team still plays lights out lockdown defense. And I think that's kind of what crushed Duke. But for Duke's credit as well, they mostly had a good defense for the first three games of the tournament, not for the last one. We'll get into that. And they were kind of just able, without Shedd, they were able to sit there and just said, all right, well, we don't think you have anyone that can facilitate a game to beat us. And they were just able to just keep it. I mean, like you mentioned, it was just far enough to the point where Houston could never really come back. And they just had to hold on against an anemic offense. I remember talking with friends. It's like, could you imagine what this Houston team would be if they could shoot? And, yeah, I mean, they're nasty. It's kind of unfortunate that this Houston team, which over the last, this is not just a 1 or 2 year thing. This is, I think, 4 years in a row where they've been very, very good. Made, I think, this four straight Sweet 16s for them, won Elite Eight in the time, and won Final Four. This is not some one-off thing. I'm sure they'll be back next year, and I would like to see them finally get a chance to finish it without injuries because they're very fun to watch.
And then the nightcap, Tennessee beats Creighton 82-75. Thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, the first half was super, super fun, kind of the what you would expect from those two teams. And then in the second half, Tennessee kind of went on their run, and Creighton just kind of folded. I'm a little disappointed that's how quickly I can sum it up, but that's just kind of how that game played out. I think Creighton just ran out of the ability to kind of stop what might be a more athletic and probably slightly more talented Tennessee team. Dalton Knecht, sensational.
Guy who, another guy who elevated his play this postseason.
Oh, yeah.
Then to Saturday, the last four games, Illinois UConn. What a weird game this one was. I only watched the first half, and frankly, that's I think all you needed to. I watched the first half. It was back and forth. Obviously, UConn starts off 9-0 to start the game. You're like, oh, this thing's over, and then UConn kind of forgets how to shoot. Hurley takes out the 7 foot. I'm for blanking on his name
Clinging.
already. Clinging. I was gonna say Coburn. That's not right.
No, not
Sorry.
Cody
So,
Coburn.
yeah, not Kofi Coburn, not Aaron Coburn either. There you go. There's your shout out, Aaron. But back to the game. Then kind of Illinois goes on a run while he's out of the game, evens it up, and then it's kind of back and forth these last couple minutes. I believe UConn goes up by. I think it was like 4 or 5 to be at the half, and then I left to go somewhere. It was Saturday evening at that point, and I got to my destination and I saw that UConn was up by 30 points. A 30-0 run is what they ended up having. That's obscene. That's unheard of. That's not even NBA like numbers. That's just what UConn is at this point, man.
The first thing I noticed about this game was the crowd. And even from both sides, it was obviously initially just the UConn crowd because they were the ones who went on that quick run, and you could hear it, and it kind of gave me flashbacks to UConn Michigan State at Madison Square Garden in 2014 in the Elite Eight, where UConn went on that run in the second half to kind of pull away from us, and that was just deafening. I mean, you mentioned kind of Klingon just being this absolute game wrecker. And I also think part of it, I don't understand Illinois' kind of game plan was, you know what, you wanted to go at him to begin with. Maybe you want to get him in foul trouble. Sure, I get it. They quickly should have realized that, oh, this doesn't work. They interviewed Brad Underwood during one of the TV
Yeah, I
time
was going to
periods.
bring that up.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go at him. He blocks
Bad,
100.
bad
He's going to block
soundbite.
100. It's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
That's
So,
called the definition of insanity.
oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think that Illinois kind of shot them, not even shot themselves in this foot as they hampered their own chances here. But at the end of the day, this is the UConn juggernaut. What were you really going to do, even if you didn't go at Klingon? They're just way too deep, way too complete, way too focused. It's a remarkable team, and we'll kind of talk about them and what their destiny and kind of their stature upon other teams can behold if they manage to pull it off here once we get to the Final Four preview. But yeah, 30-0 run, that's, I mean, I don't want to say non-professional to talk about college kids, but that's not serious. Like, just
Yeah.
throw the ball in the air, it's got to go into the hoop eventually. How does that happen?
And Terrence Shannon was not very good at this game.
No, he was not.
2 for 12 shooting. I'm looking at it now, 8 points. I know Damask had a nice first half, and then nobody else really touched the ball for them in the second half. It was so bad. So,
Yeah,
and then
Damask.
the night, you want to move on to the nightcap? Alabama 89, Clemson 82, and what was the football matchup, I call it.
College football playoff part four or
Yeah, and it
five or
I
wherever
just
we're at.
yeah. This what kind of went back and forth. I was watching it in the background, and then it just kind of seemed like Clemson's magic kind of wore off as this thing kind of went on in the second half. I don't know. Another
Yeah,
90-point performance by Alabama.
I thought it was a very entertaining game. Alabama started cold from deep. It allowed Clemson to open up that 13-point lead. And then the shots started to fall. Alabama pulled ahead at halftime, and he thought, okay, here we go. Kind of Michigan State, UNC levels. But I'll give Clemson some credit. They were able to claw their way back in and at least keep it close. And then I think for about a nice 15-minute span, it was only just those two teams trading three-pointer after three-pointer and then and one after and one. Because that, the lead, it was 6 points and 3 points and 6 points and 3 points and 6 points and 3 points and six, just nonstop for about 15 minutes. It was
Yeah.
hilarious. And I guess at that point, if you're Clemson, you've now turned into trying to play Alabama's game, and that was never going to work out for them. They needed to
Right.
keep it slow. They needed to be the ones in control. They needed to be kind of a Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs, if you will. We're going to run the ball. We're not going to try and catch you with passing. And ran out Alabama to the Final Four. Nate Oates, the former high school teacher in Metro Detroit, has completed his little turnaround of this Alabama program. You mentioned last year where they kind of were, I think they were the top overall seed last year, failed to make a Final Four, but it's just he's got that team playing a very unique style of basketball, very fun style of basketball. And you know what? Why not have a day against UConn?
Yeah. Moving forward to yesterday's games. The first one, Tennessee 66, Purdue 72. You could call this the Zach Edey and Dalton Connect game because it was essentially them just going back and forth. Tennessee, a new fan base, I think, introduced to the frustration of playing against Zach Edey and what that entails as far as he's called refereeing. I saw a lot of frustration online from Tennessee people,
Oh, yeah.
and rightfully so. I don't disagree, or I disagree with a lot of the calls that he gets most of the time. I think it's super boring and super frustrating. But at the same time, Tennessee, they went on that run where they were up, I believe, towards the end of the first half, and then kind of blew that and just were playing catch up the entire time. And if they could get somebody that wasn't named Dalton Connect to hit a shot in the second half, they probably would have won this game. But they didn't. So you can't really complain about that. Obviously, Zach Edey scoring 40 points had something to do with that. But I don't know. Purdue, they're in their Final Four. They're to the point where it's just like they're annoying as a fan base because they're like, they feel like they have to defend themselves when you say, well, Zach Edey is boring. Like, I feel like as non-Purdue fans, we're allowed to be like, Zach Edey is boring and not fun, and it's just like I don't like it. And but Purdue fans are gonna go like, well, we won or we're winning, like we win. So I'm allowed to like it too. You don't have to try and justify that he's fun because he's not. Just accept he's not and take your wins because you're going to a Final Four.
I disagree with the if Tennessee had someone else to participate in. I think they kind of lost control of that game just because, and I don't want to call it a foul show, but that's kind of what it turned
Yeah.
into. I mean, just you give up 40 points to one player in college basketball, you're probably not going to win the game. Braden Smith played very well as kind of that secondary piece. So you usually look for either him or Fletcher Lawyer to kind of, I don't even want to say go off, but to be that complement to Edey. But it was the free throw show. It was the foul show for Tennessee. And you mentioned kind of the whole like officiating against thing. I think my biggest issue with Edie is it's not even necessarily the fouls that get called on him, because you know what? People probably do foul him to stop him because he's a 7-foot-4 giant. I get that. It's the fact that he sits there and he elbows 17 guys a game in the head and
Yeah.
nothing ever gets called. I think that's the bigger issue with me, with Zach Edey personally for me. It's not what gets called on him or against him, I guess, whatever the proper term is. It's what doesn't get called against him and how much just kind of ragdolling of flailing limbs he gets away with without there ever being a, hey, man, like, you knocked this guy out. That's an offensive foul or that's a defensive foul. You cannot do this.
I definitely agree with that. The Yeah, I think if he, you're right. If he got some calls on him just every once in a while, you can't go. I think it was 30 something minutes in this one where he didn't get a foul, and
It's not possible. The
he
way
shot how many free throws? He shot 22 free throws in that game.
the way he plays basketball, it's not possible for him to not get called for some of the fouls if you're going to call those same ones against him. It's just, it's not
Yeah.
possible. Or it shouldn't be. And here we are.
Anything else before we head into the final game of
No,
the
this is the
weekend?
best. This is the best for last.
This was the best for last. The in-state rivalry, Duke North Carolina State. I'm gonna say John Schreier kind of lost this game for them. Like, I
Oh,
know
absolutely. I agree.
Filipowski, your best player, fouling out with that much time left is unacceptable. I know he was going against DJ Burns for a lot of this game, but that's borderline malpractice. They didn't have an answer for him. DJ Burns wasn't even trying to play defense too, and you like still didn't exploit as much as you should have. He goes for 29 points. Really, their only answer for Duke was Jared McCann went off. He went 5 for 10 for three, 11-11 from the line. He led all scoring with 32 points, but outside of that, was not North Carolina's day off. Sorry, Duke's day offensively, and it was the DJ Burn show.
Yeah, slow first half for both teams, and then kind of a switch flip for NC State where they were shooting 80% for the first 15 minutes of that second half. It was, and they were all twos, which
Yeah.
was crazy. And you mentioned kind of the Shire with Filipowski. I actually think he got the entire DJ Burns kind of problem wrong. I think he approached it in a terrible way, and you can't even use the, oh, we didn't have time to prepare excuse. That school is 4 miles down the road from you. That's
Yeah, it's
probably the
your third
seventh
time
time. Yeah,
playing them.
exactly. I think DJ Burns, yes, he's a very unique problem because he is Zach Randolph in the post, but unlike Zach Randolph, he has vision and ability. He can kick. So it's kind of tough to double him. That's where I think you have to kind of mix it up to the point where he doesn't necessarily know what's coming. And that's when maybe he hesitates an extra second or just something happens where I think you have to make him think. And Duke never did that. They said for the first, I think, 32 or 33 minutes, we're going to leave you on an island, or we're going to guard you on an island. Go have fun. And that's what he did. You watched him backing down the young guy, the Filipowski. There was nothing they could do because he's a force.
Yeah.
He would start at the 3-point line and then just put his, he just start throwing his ass into these guys. And it's like, all right, there's nothing you can do about this. I'm bigger than you. You can't hand check me. And then I'm going to hit you with a nice little shimmy and I'm going to get a little turnaround floater. And I think that when you have something like that, I think you have to switch it up. Obviously, if you go double team every time, he's going to kick it. He has the
Right.
vision. He has the technical ability. That's what makes him so much fun, is he's not just some big dumpy guy who runs around to foul people. He's a basketball player. He's an athlete. He's so
Footwork.
much fun. He's incredible. And I think that's kind of where John Shire on the defensive end kind of drop the ball, if you will, and kind of their preparation and what they should have done with that team. I think with DJ Burns as well, he's so unique. He's always playing with a smile on his face. You kind of see him vibing and during TV timeouts when the music's playing and he's dancing on the court, and you see him every time something happens. He's looking at his teammates. They're all laughing. This NC State team has real, I mean, inc really, really grown on me. They've been incredibly fun to watch. I think they play the right way. They play. They've got the smiles on their face, and they kind of said, you know, the second we stop having fun with this, that's probably when we're gonna lose. And they're still having fun. You've got the videos of him afterwards, kind of basically giving McCain a taste of his own medicine. I don't know if you saw the video of Burns screaming at the Duke fans,
Yeah.
season is over. So much fun, wildly entertaining, and just he's so unique, he's so entertaining, and I love the guy.
I think I love the part too that their second best player's name is also DJ.
Also DJ, I think it's
Yeah.
Horn, right?
Yeah, Horn. Yeah. And I will say this, any team that can end and keep Duke out of a Final Four is a friend of mine.
Agreed. Agreed completely.
So that's it. We have our four now.
Should we go quick Final Four preview?
Yeah, Final Four preview, the first game. The team we just mentioned, North Carolina State, is going to play Purdue, the 1 seed, 11 seed. North Carolina State, the 6th 11 seed to ever make it, 7th double-digit seed ever. I think this is a terrible matchup for them personally. I think DJ Burns is really going to struggle against Edie. Having your best player be a big guy and have to it go against Edie, I don't really think works for a lot of teams. I think it's got to be guard play, so that maybe turns into like a DJ Horn maybe going off or one of their other guards. But I think this is a bad matchup for North Carolina State. Purdue's rolling. It's really hard to not see a Purdue UConn final, to be honest, just how much better these teams have looked than the rest of the field.
I agree with that. You mentioned kind of the matchup thing. The other thing I think is an issue is DJ Burns at times in this tournament has been slowed down by stupid fouls, and he's
Yes.
going up against the king of stupid fouls, which we
Yes,
just
very good
spent
point.
half an hour ranting. So I completely agree with you. I'm afraid that this guy might spend a large majority of this game on the bench because there might be a quick foul, and then you know what, a second foul, and then he's got to sit for 10 minutes, and maybe they bring him back in the first half, and oh my God, there's a third foul, and it's like, well, he might foul out in the first half
Yeah.
as things go with the way Zach Edey plays and the way Zach Edey's officiated. I really hope that doesn't happen though, because I want to see Burns against Edey on the offensive end. I want to see if he's got these little post moves and these little
Footwork,
kind of
yeah.
shoulder shimmies and spin moves, if that can work on Edey as well. Because Edey, I mean, you saw the massive wingspan with that block of connect at the end of the Tennessee game. He really is. As much as I can kind of criticize him for being a defensive liability, when you can kind of put him in a blender from a team, and you know what, maybe you get a guard running at him, he's just not fast enough as a human being to catch up. I'm very curious to see how it is against a slower moving human like DJ Burns, but a very fluid moving human. So I agree
Yeah.
that I think Purdue.
My thing is with the Burns thing is like, is he fluid enough to make up for the 5 or 6 inches he's giving up here?
That's why I want to find out. I'm
Yeah.
so curious.
Yeah. It is going to be a fun matchup. And I think an even funner one will be in the other one when UConn beats Alabama, as I'm predicting. I don't know. Alabama shoots 40% from three and 50% from the field. They've got a chance against anybody. But I don't think they're going to match up. It's another good matchup down low for UConn with Quinnen. We mentioned Illinois not really having a big guy that could kind of body him up at all. And
Yep.
Hawkins played a lot of that game at the
Hey,
five, and
Hawkins
that
on
was a
coast today.
mistake. Especially if he wasn't hitting threes like he wasn't. But Alabama's going to try and stretch him. Maybe Quinnen doesn't play as much because of how athletic and quick Alabama wants to play, and that could obviously help them out there. But I'm also very, very curious to see how that works with a team like Alabama that just wants to run.
Yeah, I agree with you completely here. This is what somewhere. I know I kind of had said earlier, I think Purdue is maybe the only team with their guard shooting. I actually think that Alabama, because of how different and how unique their style is, I do think that they can not present a challenge, but I think that they are a team that, you know what, if we catch fire and like you say, if we're hitting 40 plus percent from deep, they absolutely have a chance.
Yeah.
They're gonna limit Klingon's ability to kind of be as impactful as he was against Illinois, because yes, Alabama would love to get two freebie point layups all the time, but they're perfectly content with jacking up 35, 40 threes a game. We've seen it in the tournament, and I think that's something that Nate Oates will probably have them stay on. It'll be the Sears show. It'll just be, hey guys, if you see it, grip it, rip it, let's go. It's kind of one of those styles make fights, and because these styles are so different, there might just be a chance that if you approach this problem from a different manner, you can kind of you can solve it. And I think if you want to equate that to something that we saw recently, the CJ Stroud Ohio State Buckeyes against Georgia last year was one of those where we all knew what Georgia was, kind of more of an NFL type team where it's going to be, you know what, we're going to run it, we're going to control the tempo, we're bigger than you, we're stronger than you. And then here comes this Ohio State team that's run and gun, air raid, we're going to throw it everywhere. And CJ Stroud almost pulled off the upset by himself. It's just one of those where I think that Ohio State was one of the few teams that could have beaten Georgia in that kind of in their kind of peak, just due to the fact they didn't play the same style of football as them. This is that same thing. Alabama does not play the same style of football as UConn. I think that if they show up and they hit their threes, they can absolutely find themselves with 5 minutes left in a game, or at least close enough to hit a couple more threes and make it a game.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I don't have much to add for that. I'm going to be basic, though. It's going to be Purdue UConn, and I'm going to tab Purdue cutting down the nets.
Oh wow. That's crazy because you didn't have them out of the first weekend when we started this whole recap stuff.
Correct. They've truly.
I also have a Purdue UConn final. I am gonna go with UConn. I think they're the better team. I think Klingon, as you mentioned, might be someone who can size-wise get in Zach Edey's face and possibly not foul him because he is the same height and his arms can reach as high as Zach Edey's arms can reach. Give me UConn going back to back. And I kind of mentioned this slightly earlier, but I think with a UConn win, they solidify themselves as probably the best team of the 21st century, or at least in my lifetime. I know we were talking beforehand about the Florida Gators back to back team.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'm not, obviously, we were seven at the time where we could not have sat there with kind of analytical adult brains. But I think this UConn team is just sensational. They're the first national champion since that Florida team to make it back to the Final Four. I think they've really got a chance to kind of do something that just is seldom seen in this modern day of basketball, where so much changes so quickly.
Yeah, and doing that with I think three starters that are transfers.
I'm glad you bring that up because we got to talk about it—the transfer thing specifically with the Elite Eight. I think 19 of the 20 or 19 of the 40 starters in the Elite Eight were transfers. You mentioned UConn having three, Alabama had four, NC State had five. Purdue is kind of one of those, oh, we've only got one. Duke was clean, they didn't have any. Tennessee, I believe, was also relatively similar, where they only had one, which was Connect. Yeah, welcome to the brave new world. You don't have transfers, you're not going to compete. Because you just got to be able to fill holes in your team as quick as possible. And that's not always going to be recruiting that 17-year-old kid and hoping that by 20 he's ready to play.
Yeah, not especially not if everyone else is doing it like clearly it is at this point. So
Yep.
I don't have much else to add. I've had this LSU Iowa game on in the background on the women's side, and it's been sick, quite honestly. I haven't paid too much attention to it because we've been doing this, but it's close game, it's back and forth. Caitlin Clark got 15 points in the first half, as she does, so.
And I might have to turn it on. Caitlin Clark is kind of box office, but yeah, I don't have much else either. Like I said, we were talking before this. There'll probably be a delay in next week's episode just due to the fact that I will be out of the
Abroad.
country on Monday and then traveling Tuesday. So I'll let you know when I'm home. I'm going to rely on you to be the chief Final Four guy. I don't know how much of this I'm going to be able to watch, but I don't really have much else to say either. As we've both gotten that before we hit the rambling stage, to those who made it this far, thank you very much. This is probably one of the shorter ones we've had recently, just with the lack of kind of games to cover, but hopefully you enjoyed it. For myself, have a good rest of the week. Turn it over to Connor.
Enjoy your lives.